Hey everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of Data Exposed. I'm your host, Scott Klein, and with me today is Kevin Farley. Kevin, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, and yourself?
Good, thank you. And thank you for coming. Why don't you take a second to introduce yourself?
So my name's Kevin Farley. We established that. I'm a program manager in the SQL Server product team. Right now, my main charter is working on the always-on availability suite.
Awesome. So you're here today to talk about always-on, obviously.
Yes, I am.
So this has been around since 2012,
right.
Correct? They've made some improvements in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
What's the awesomeness you're adding to SQL vNext in terms of always-on?
So I took this over about 6-9 months ago, and I'm kind of on a little different tack with what I'm planning for the release. What I'm doing is going back and looking at the customer pain points that we've had and trying to address those. So rather than going for something big and flashy, I'm going for something that's going to make all the DBAs happy.
So. And that's our goal. We want to make DBAs. Did you hear that? Want to make DBAs. You guys want to make you happy.
Yeah.
So what are the pain points you're actually hearing from the DBAs?
So one of them has to do with what it takes to trigger a failover within an availability group. You would normally expect that any time anything went wrong, it would fail over. But the way the product is currently architected, it's only going to fail over based on the health of the instance. So as long as the instance is healthy, a database that may be key to your application can go down and it still won't trigger a failover.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So we're changing that. We're making it optional so we don't change behaviors by default. But what we're doing is making it so if you set this feature on, then we will trigger based on the health of the database. So if any database within the availability group goes offline, then we'll trigger a failover automatically.
Okay, let me just rephrase that, just make sure I understand. So you may have, right now it's at the instance level.
Right.
So if your database goes down, hey, always on says we're still good.
Yep.
But you're changing it so that if any database in your always on availability group goes down, or let's say goes down, it'll fail over.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Now, so you may have 10 databases, one's bad, will it fail over all 10 of those then, or?
Within availability groups, it's the group that fails over.
The group that fails
over. That's the whole part of the value prop is that it's a group of databases that presumably are all part of the same application, so you want them all to move as a unit.
Okay. That's good.
Right now, the granularity is at the availability group, so there's just one switch to set.
Yep.
There's some talk about sometime in the future making it granular to the individual databases, but right now we want the whole group to move.
But at least it's at the database level, so if the database goes down, you're not waiting for, you know.
Right.
Okay. And what kind of things would, like, what kind of things would, say, cause a database to kind of initiate that failover?
So the classic one I just heard yesterday was a customer had a database where one of the disks had gone out underneath it, so it took that database offline entirely, but always on didn't fail over because the rest of the instance was perfectly healthy.
Yeah, that's a good example. So yeah, it is a typically hardware issue that would fail, that kind of fails stuff over?
Most often,
okay. Yeah. All right, and so first of all, it's for the database failover. What else now, what other features we got?
One that's been asked for forever is to support distributed transaction coordinator transactions within an availability group. Right now, if you have an application which has queries that join different databases, potentially across different servers, if it spawns a distributed transaction, that's not supported. And there's some customers that have gone ahead and done it anyway. It's not blocked, but the problem is there's windows where you can lose data, and that's why it's not supported.
Oh, I see. Okay. Right.
And so the issue is if availability group fails over, the DTC instance on the initial instance knows the state of all the transactions that were in flight and which ones should complete and which ones should be rolled back. When we come up on the other node, the local DTC doesn't know anything about them. So the best you can do is guess. And sometimes you might guess wrong.
Yeah.
So we've done a significant amount of work to re-architect the connection to DTC and make sure that when you land on the other side, all the right connections happen so that we're able to
plug in.
It
knows about all the transactions that are going on.
Exactly.
So today, what you're saying is, I could still do that, but it's not supported because I might have some data loss somewhere, potentially.
It is not supported or recommended.
Right, okay.
It's not blocked, but...
Not recommended, yeah.
One of the other interesting things about this is that it's been a joint effort between the SQL team and the Windows team, because we actually ended up needing a change within the MSDTC APIs
Oh, interesting.
in order to make it work just right. So we can rejoin a transaction from a different instance.
From another instance, okay. So you're leveraging the Windows MSDTC to be able to leverage, be able to do this.
Yeah. That's another theme in this release, is that I'm working really closely with the Windows team, the Azure DB team, SQL DB team, and just trying to pull all those resources together.
Okay, so we've got, all right, that's a good one. I think, do you see a lot of people using DTC in this environment or wanting to do
There's
that?
There's a huge number of people requesting it. It's one of my most requested features.
Really? Okay. All right, well, there you go. Yeah. It's coming.
Yeah. Again, not something really flashy to demo, but it's just, it works now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and again, supported, so that's awesome, right?
Yep.
Good. And what else we got?
Let's see. Some minor tweaks. Right now, in the current product, you can have three synchronous replicas, but only two can be targets for auto failover. So you have a primary and one secondary that will fail over back and forth. Now we've bumped the number of auto failover targets up to match the number of synchronous replicas.
Okay.
So any of those three can now be, failover.
Failover.
So if one fails and that triggers a failover, you've still got another one to go to. So you still have your high availability in the face of a single failover.
Okay, is this the sort of the quorum type of the scenario?
No, it's just extra security.
Okay, perfect. All right, is that another big feature asked for? Or
not a huge ask, but it's just another one of just completing the story.
The story, completing the HA story.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Okay, good.
Not a specific surface area feature, but another place where we've done huge work is in the log transport. So the components that move the actual transaction data from one node to the other. What we're starting to see, we've kind of got the bleeding edge customers that are out there running really, really fast hardware.
Yeah.
And always on is trying to keep up with that.
so the hardware is actually working faster than the SQL. Yeah.
Right. So what's happening is when you get applications that have very high transaction rates with a lot of log data, there's a cap to where our current architecture can keep up.
Yeah.
In some cases, we're not able to, and if the primary falls or the secondary falls far enough behind, that'll feed back into the primary and slow the whole system down.
Okay, yeah.
We actually have at least one customer that has all of their storage on PCIe flash, and we're trying to keep up with that.
Yeah.
So we've actually looked at the entire pipeline end to end and streamlined the whole pipeline to make it much more efficient and much lower latency, higher throughput. What I really like about the way we've approached it is that we haven't set our targets in terms of percentage improvements.
Mm-hmm.
We've set our targets in terms of the percentage of the performance of a standalone system.
Okay.
So we want to be within a certain percentage of the performance of a machine that isn't even in an availability group.
Oh, really? Okay. Interesting approach.
So that's the target we're aiming for.
Okay.
The ultimate goal would be to be exactly as fast. That's not probably going to happen, but we're trying to get awfully close.
As close as we can to help solve the problem.
Yep.
Okay. Perfect. Now, from that log transport performance, is it, you said it's just trying to keep up with the hardware, but is there anything that we can leverage, like you say, from the flash perspective? I mean, or are we just from within the engine itself trying to keep up?
Mostly this is just the flash lets the writes happen, IOs happen very, very fast.
Right.
And we're able to keep up
with that.
Okay. We actually found some algorithms we had to change within the guts of the schedulers where the IOs are happening way faster than we're used to.
Okay.
So we would boost IO completions, put them at the front of the list, and if they happen instantaneously, that's not necessarily the right thing to do.
Right, okay.
So
you had to take an internal look. Okay, that's good.
It's been pretty comprehensive.
Yeah.
When you look at readable secondaries, we've made some changes on that front too. With the current shipping product, if you have readable secondaries and you're using the listener to route transactions to the read-write transactions to the primary and read-only to the secondary, you get connected to the first secondary in the list that answers.
Okay.
So all of the read transactions go to that secondary.
Oh, okay.
Which if you've got mostly an update transaction and occasionally reads, that's just fine.
Yeah.
If you've got a lot of heavy query workload, you might want to scale that read workload out.
Oh, because you may have, you're routing to this one, and you've got a lot of reads, these others may not be up to date.
So that one gets overloaded and the rest are sitting there idling.
Right.
So what we're now doing is allowing load balancing among the readable secondaries. And the way we do that is, right now there's the read-only routing list that DBAs might be familiar with, which is a list that says when this instance is the primary, these are the secondaries I want to be read-only in this order.
Yep.
What we're adding to that now is for each of the elements in that list, it can be an inner list of instances that will load balance across.
Okay.
So you can have, when this instance is primary, we'll load balance across these instances. When that one's primary, maybe it's at a different site and we want to load balance across a different set.
Yeah, right, okay.
So there's a whole lot of flexibility there.
So basically distributing that workload across the secondaries.
Exactly.
And you mentioned kind of in a different site, so talk about that just a little more. So if I got a primary, I may have another primary in another site?
No, you can have, so you may have two sites with replicas spread across them.
Oh, I see, yeah, okay.
And when the primary's over here, you want to load balance across these secondaries. When the primary moves over here, then you want those to be.
I see, okay, yeah. Okay, so the primary, in a failover, the primary now becomes over here, for example?
Right.
Okay, and so you're going to distribute that across another set of secondaries.
Exactly.
Okay, perfect. That was a good one, too.
Yeah.
I like that one.
A bit esoteric, but there's this entity called a group managed service account.
Okay.
So what is it? When you do just a default install of SQL Server, the instance runs under a managed service or a service account.
Yep.
So NT service,
yep.
SQL Server, blah. That's great for a standalone instance.
Yeah.
But the problem is that if you have an availability group, each server has a different identity that the server runs under.
Yeah.
So if you need to access common resources, like file shares or whatnot, that doesn't work. Also, those particular entities don't have any meaning off the box, so they can't be used across the network. So a lot of DBAs fall back to using just regular domain accounts. Then you have to deal with the passwords, and you're running it under an account that could potentially be logged into, which is a security issue. So Windows came up with, in 2012, a group managed service account, which is an account at domain scope that works a lot like the service account on a local node.
Oh, interesting.
So it's domain scope. The identity is valid across the entire domain.
Okay.
So you can use that one identity to set permissions for any resource you might want to use. The domain controller worries about resetting the password, so you don't have to go around and reset the password on all these different nodes.
Right.
So you can set the policy for how many days between password rolls, and it automatically rolls it out across the domain, so you don't have to ever touch anything.
So it's just a one time, and it just deploys that across all the...
And, of course, they're using nice, complex, random passwords.
Right.
Nobody has to remember, because you never see them.
Oh, so it does it automatically?
Yes. Nobody has to touch anything.
Beautiful.
I like
all
that.
Yeah.
No work.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, so no writing, no sticky notes with, oh, what's the password now?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I had talked to one large customer that had hundreds of servers, and it's just a nightmare every time they have to change their passwords because they have to go around and touch every single server and change.
Yeah. And this just randomly generates and distributes that across the...
Yep.
That's beautiful.
Every 90 days or 30 days.
Yeah, whatever
or,
your policy is.
Yep.
Okay. That's sweet.
Yeah. And finally, the last feature I'm going to talk about today is part of the story of... You've all heard we're going to deprecate database mirroring, right? It's going to go away someday. We haven't yanked it out of the product yet, and it won't be yanked out of this version because we didn't have a one-for-one replacement.
Yeah, okay.
There's a bunch of customers out there running database mirroring in environments where we don't have a replacement, and one of those issues was people running on standard edition.
Yeah, okay.
So what we're releasing in this release is a special basic availability group. So there's now two classes of availability groups. There's basic and advanced.
Okay.
Advanced is what you know and love today, all this stuff. Basic is scoped down to have the same surface area as database mirroring, same limitations. So you have two replicas, no more than that, one database per group, small group, but that's exactly how database mirroring was laid out. There's no readable secondaries, no backup on secondaries. You can still use database snapshots just like you can in database mirroring, so that's how you can get some read access on secondaries. So the whole idea is to make a one-for-one exact replacement, and that will facilitate eventually retiring
mirroring.
Mirroring.
Is there a process to go from mirroring to always-on standard?
We will document that.
That processor, it's, okay.
There's no automatic wizard to step through, but we will document how you do that.
How you do it, okay. Now, all these are currently going to be in CTP2?
Those are in CTP2. Not all of them have GUI support.
GUI support, okay.
So a lot of that's T-SQL only at this point.
Okay.
And we'll document how you do that. Coming CTP3, there'll be full SSMS support.
Okay.
SSMS is being worked on as we speak. So it's possible some of this may actually surface by then.
Well, by CTP2, okay. All right, perfect. And if there's if they have any feedback, I'm assuming you're gonna be looking for feedback on some of this. Could we put your email address in the description and say, hey, if you've got feedback for these features, get emailed.
Or any other feature in that area.
In that area, okay, perfect.
Or you can always file connect. That's issues. True. I looked through those too.
Okay, yeah, either one. So connect or email Kevin. So Kevin, thank you so much. These are great. A lot of these are really, I like that, they're all very good and all, I think, things that DBAs are like, oh, finally, right? a lot of these. So I think there's, is there any, not that I want you to spill the beans, but I mean, will there be enhancement to these prior to GA, or is it just something, hey, we need to have Kevin come back in and do a pre-GA show?
So these are all pretty much set as far as what the functionality is going to be. The enhancements between now and then are going to be just in the manageability surface area.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but it's just kind of like, hey,
we do have some other features that we have in our back pocket we're working on. We're going to try and get them into CTP3, but we don't have the schedules worked out yet, so I'm not going to talk about them at the moment.
Yeah, we wouldn't ask you to do that, but maybe we have you back for CTP3.
Just some cool stuff.
Cool, awesome.
I'm mining the SQL Azure infrastructure.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, hey, Kevin, thanks for coming.
Sure.
These are awesome. So if you, again, have feedback for Kevin, either through a connect or we'll make sure that we put his email address in the description of the show. But Kevin, thanks for coming. Appreciate your time. All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
You.
We'll see you next time.